This is the Bike Snob of New York City, and you're listening to The Bike Show on Resonance FM 104.4.
When you move from A to B, why would you push around the streets? 1.5 tons of dead metal and 3 empty seats. You get stuck in congestion, increase in road aggression. That I would drive a car to work, man, I resent the question.
I don't like being late, so while you sit and wait,
I let my legs gyrate and swoosh past in the cycle lane.
Push your right leg downwards, push your left leg downwards, now gyrate.
Feet set in motion, the revolution starts. No roaring engines, just beating hearts.
Okay, so if you're going to a party, don't bother, bring your car key. You can dance and get tipsy, but still get back home safely.
Your transport's right below you, no crashes to destroy you. Just heal and heal, your feet will gently roll you. Stay firmly on the ground, a gentle stroll through town.
Those hunks of meat they call your feet can really get you round.
Put your right leg forward, put your left leg forward. Stop. Robo time.
This is the Bike Show here on Resonance FM with me, Jack Thurston.
And me, Jen Kerrison.
Oh yeah. Now you're working it. Kid sensitive back on the mic.
At the first sign of trouble, when my foot start to muddle, close to harm, when no arms seem to offer a cuddle, with no get up and go, I just get up and go. Prize my derriere from its chair, warm my muscles by hitting the streets. Steady pace, breathing deep, 2-4 times, signature from my feet. Marching beat from concrete onto grass, of the parks, the contrast I'm feeling inside keeps my mind on the task. Now back home, I'll collapse on my bed, feeling totally spent, muscles too weak to tense. Let pillow meet with head, fall fast asleep with a mind that feels freed. I'm never more grounded than when I'm moving at speed. Feet set in motion, the revolution starts. No roaring engines, just beating hearts. Feet set in motion, the revolution starts. No roaring engines, just beating hearts.
Peace.
Welcome to the Bike Show here on Resonance FM. It's a cold October evening. It feels like after our Indian summer that the winter is setting in. I should quickly say that that was the Vanilla Muffins with a track called Bike Hop. The Vanilla Muffins are a band hailing from Bristol. Thanks to Fionn, a listener to the show, for sending that track in. That was good, Jen, wasn't it?
That was great. Very much bopping along to that one.
Yeah, it's kind of catchy. And the robo boogie in the middle, well, you know, that's always going to be a hit with a child of the 80s, such as myself.
And myself.
So, Jen, you've got your crutches there. You've not been out on the bike.
You've been
in front of the telly.
I've been in front of the telly, yes, this weekend, watching a little bit of the European Track Championships, which is always interesting. Not quite as enjoyable as being out doing it myself, unfortunately. But
so what happened?
Well, lots happened, actually. The English got up with 7 gold medals, which is quite impressive. The wonderful Pendleton did very well, as expected. I think no one expects anything less of her at the moment. She won the Kieran and also got up to gold with the team sprint, but she did fail in her individual sprint. Somewhat controversially, actually, her wheel slipped as she was getting off, and I think that's happened quite a number of times.
Well, her wheel slipped when?
As she was taking off. I didn't actually see this event, but I believe from what I've been reading.
What point?
At the start. Yeah, okay. Sorry, yeah. So she's had a slip, only a minor slip, but it wasn't enough to get her back into the contention.
Okay,
but
so it's like a
She skidded and fell behind. And
too much power, actually. So she skidded out. And that was the same that happened for Clancy in one of his events, but that left him right out of the finals. So we also did well with the new event, the Omnium, which is like the, I guess, a heptathlon, but in cycling. So
this is the jack of all trades.
The new Olympic event that's having its debut next year, actually, on the 2nd of August, I think, when we kick off with the track cycling over in Stratford. So Laura Trott got a gold in the Omnium, which was an impressive start for a fairly new event. And I think everybody's been waiting to hear what happened to Sir Chris Hoy, but unfortunately he had to drop out altogether due to a chest infection. So that's going to leave him trailing behind with trying to get points, because I'm not sure if you're aware, Jack, but the these track championships now are a part of a new qualifying series for the Olympics. So each of these track cycling events that happen up until April are now a way for cyclists to gain points. And when that closes in April, that will determine then whether they actually have a spot at the Olympics or not.
Okay, so but you said at the beginning that it was the English team, but is it Great Britain or is it England?
Sorry.
I don't know.
That's my ignorance at being from way over across the pond. But
yeah, I'm not sure.
Call everything England over here.
I'm not sure supporters of Chris Hoy would like that very much. All our many Scottish, Welsh and Northern Irish listeners.
Great Britain, yes.
Because sometimes, they compete as Scotland and sometimes it's GB. David Miller sometimes rides for Scotland and sometimes rides for GB and then sometimes rides for Malta.
David Miller's ridden for Malta because
he was born in Malta because he was a Navy brat.
This weekend, I believe, has been the Great Britain team.
Okay.
But I will do my research a little better next time.
So when you're slumped...
I feel like President Obama when he called Her Majesty the Queen of England and everyone was in uproar. So I hope we don't get the same response this time.
When you're slumped in front of the... in front of the television,
doing
your physio to get your leg better. What is it about track cycling that is most exciting and most interesting for the spectator?
I think track cycling is an amazing spectator event, particularly if you're there, though. So if anyone out there is listening and has never been to watch track cycling at the velodrome, get along, because the television screen actually doesn't do justice the angles that those velodromes are. I think an Olympic velodrome, the angle at the ends is 42 degrees. So you have to be doing quite a pace to even be able to stay upright on that sort of angle. So I guess my father's a track cyclist, so he's a gold and silver medalist in the veterans, so I've always been a big fan. And I think it does do more justice going out there. So for me as a spectator watching it on television, just having that insight into how it's really dangerous and really exciting.
But there are loads of different ways that they race, because sometimes they race like with one on either side of the track and then it's like they have to lap each other or something. That's the pursuit. And then they got some of them when they're just going along really slowly and then they start racing. And then you've got ones where they go along behind a motorbike. And then you've got the ones where they're like giving each other a sling.
I find that all
a bit baffling to be able to follow it in an intricate level. Obviously, you can have an exciting rush as they go to the line. But picking the differences between the different disciplines.
You know, it took me...
And I don't even know the rules of the Madison.
I think...
You're going to give us the rules of the Madison.
I will give you the rules of the Madison. You know, I've been watching track cycling for the better part of 25 years, and it still can be a little bit confusing. But the Madison, unfortunately, has been dropped from the Olympic events, but it's such an interesting race to watch, because it actually started over 100 years ago in Madison Square Garden. That's where it got its name. And it was the North Americans set down a law that forbid people from riding over 12 hours in the six-day races. So the fellow that owned the track in Madison... decided that he could get people still coming in 24 hours if we still had the men on the track for 24 hours, but actually just had them racing 50% of the time. This is where it gets confusing.
So it's like a kind of tag team.
So they're doing tag team, yeah. So basically one of the guys will race a lap and then grab his partner's hand and slingshot him forward, and then he'll rest for a lap while his other partner does the other lap. So it's like a relay race that you would watch the runners do in the Olympics, which I think we all understand, but it's around the track up to 200 times in some Madison events, with them slingshotting each other around. So, it can be a long race. 200 laps is a long way to get around, and it's still raced in the six-day events.
And is that interesting to watch for 200? Is that like watching the... you know, the 10,000-metre steeplechase in the athletics where, you know, oh, yeah, over they go, over the water jump again.
Yeah, is it interesting to watch to me? Yes, I'm on crutches. It's a lot more interesting to watch for me than the horse racing, I can tell you that.
That's an endorsement.
Yeah. But, you know, it's one of those things that the more you understand it, the more interesting it becomes to watch. It took me 10 years before watching road races like the Tour de France became interesting because I started to understand the tactics. The other thing with the Madison is that you actually win the race if you are a lap ahead. So it's actually, you actually win it on laps. But if every team comes in at the same amount of laps, so no one's lapped anyone, then you win on the amount of points that you've won in intermediate sprints. So there are a lot of intricacies, like we are now used to with all sorts of cycling. If no one's lapped anyone and if everyone's on the same amount of points, then it just comes down to that final sprint for the line. So you can have done 200 laps and it's still just first man over the line wins. So you know, it's a game of strategy like a lot of cycling events, and that does make it very interesting if you know what's going on.
And so the fact that the Madison is not in the Olympic programme for 2012 means that we don't have, in Britain, a Madison team.
This is the tragedy, yes. I was watching them go around, and there was a Belgian A team and a Belgian B team and a Netherlands A team and a Netherlands B team, and I was looking, trying to work out where the Brits were, and when I realised that there is just no funding for the Brits to race in this event because British Cycling only funds for people to train and participate in Olympic events. So what that means is that there's 10 Olympic events and... five Olympic events and five for the men, five for the women. And Madison, since the Madison's been dropped, anyone who specialised in that event just now doesn't have the funding to train and race in it, which I think is a great tragedy for the individuals who are excelling in that sport, but also for the sport because, you know, you've got little tackers that are out down at Herne Hill getting their legs up for track cycling, and it just narrows down the diversity of what young people are going to be willing to try, because if it's not an Olympic sport, they just won't get funded for it.
I guess it's the downside of the focusing on medals strategy, which I guess a lot of people would say has done great things for the British team, great things for track cycling's profile, but the fact that responsible for half the British medal haul at the Beijing Games, whatever it was. And then if you're only focusing on those Olympic events and to the exclusion of everybody else, I suppose that allows you to do really, really well in those, but then not the other. So it's
a bit of a catch-22, isn't it? Because you're absolutely right. I think the amount of people doing well with track cycling in this country has really boosted the profile of the sport, and yet you have all these younger people going into the sport but then having a much more narrow focus of where they want to go with it, which
the loss of the kilometre pursuit, I think a lot of people have been upset about as well.
Yeah.
Right, well, enough of life on the track. Thanks, Jen.
My pleasure.
Moving on, this week's show. Back at the beginning of September this year, there was a cycling festival held at the Royal Geographical Society here in London. And it was organised by Intelligence Squared and featured a cast list of cycling luminaries that included Will Self, Jeff Dyer and Graham O'Bree, among others. We're going to serialise some of the talks with the permission of Intelligence Squared, so thanks to them, over the next few weeks. But I want to start with a talk by Patrick Field. Patrick is a long-standing friend of the bike show. He's been a London cyclist since the early 70s, and together with Jez Hastings, he was one of the founders of the Dunwich Dynamo bike ride, and he also runs the London School of Cycling. If that weren't enough, he's a five-time finisher of the Paris-Brest Paris that we've been talking about on the show the last 2 weeks, and he's written a number of books about cycling, including the new Time Out Guide to Cycling in London, where he's contributed the rides. His talk at the Intelligence Squared Cycling Festival is entitled Cycling is a brackets very fun political process. Patrick Field.
I love my washing machine. It's a phrase you don't often hear. Why do people get so fanatical about bicycling? People get fanatical about bicycling because it allows us to experience all our human potential all at once. First, the effort involved puts you directly in touch with your animal identity. A keyboard jockey who rides to work gets the voluptuous appetite of a ditch digger without going anywhere near the gym. If the big switch turns off tonight, no electricity, no pipe water, no sewage disposal, humans might not go extinct, but our numbers will soon thin out. We are animals. We are also, in our multitudes, products of industry. Colloquially, people talk about learning to balance a bike. But discovering the trick of staying up on two wheels is the exact opposite. A bicycle only balances when leaning on something. In use, it's falling. The only thing balanced are the forces. The trick of falling without falling down is not learning to balance, it's getting used to not being balanced. A bicycle's dynamism is the perfect metaphor for modernism, where nothing ever stays the same. Riding a bicycle is the apotheosis of machine life. On a bicycle, you become the biological element of a cyborg system. Alfred Jarry called it the mineral skeleton that will allow us to outstrip evolution. It's not natural. It's as far from nature as you can get. Riding a bike gives you instant contact with your identity as a biological system and an industrial product. There's also an important spiritual element. Riding from here to Paris is no big deal. Elephant and Castle, Croydon, New Haven for Dieppe, through Seine Maritime, across the Vexin. Seeing the Eiffel Tower rising over the horizon compares to queuing at St. Pancras and sitting on a train as home cooking compares to pot noodle. Being an airline passenger is like eating toothpaste. But you have to choose it. The hardest part of any bike journey is the idea. The rider's most important quality, good morale. Traveling at a comfortable pace is not an athletic achievement, it's a triumph of the will. Then there's the social element. Atmospheric resistance rises with the third power of velocity. Simple physics mean that two people cooperating can keep moving with significantly less effort than a soloist. Ride a bicycle and you're an animal, a machine, a soul, and a potential comrade. A fulfilled modern human, an Ubermensch. Riding a bicycle is democratic, not like playing the violin. You don't need to be gifted. Ride a bike and you get better at riding a bike. The more you ride, the better you get. The practical pneumatic tyre dates from around 1890. The automatic freewheel, the last element of the modern bicycle, became available in 1898. In historical terms, that was yesterday morning. In evolutionary terms, a blink. This is the pioneer era of pedal cycle use. We are only scratching the surface of its potential. Riding a bike in England in the last third of the 20th century meant being part of a vanishing tribe. A vanishing tribe that was stubbornly refusing to vanish. If you spoke to a politician, a planner, or a traffic engineer on the subject of cycle travel, you could be certain that the first sentence of their reply would contain one of the following words: safety, risk, or danger. Suggesting that people might use bikes to conveniently fulfill their daily agendas was about as sensible, sane, and mainstream as advocating mass use of magic carpets. Now, we're into the era of mixed messages. Travel by bike and you may be treated like a heroine or hero. Also, still, you may be treated like vermin. The fantasy among our rulers that bicycling would wither away to nothing has been superseded. They've recognised the value of cycle use, that the bicycle is a solution to a raft of problems. Global warming, motor traffic congestion, and the elephant in the room, the public health time bomb of sedentary living. Like all sensible people, they look forward to bicycling catching on with ordinary folk. Their new fantasy is that these people will take up travelling by bike, but remain unchanged by the experience. That normal people will ride bikes and stay normal. This cannot be. People who ride bikes become happier, more optimistic, more self-reliant, less fearful, less governable. Mao Zedong remarked that revolution is not a dinner party. The old authoritarian was right. Revolution is not a dinner party, but it might be a cycle tour. How can we make ourselves more infectious to the bicycle-deficient majority? How can we intensify the epidemic spread of bicycle madness? Our simple, pleasant obligation is to be good role models, to make our travel look easy, stylish, enviable, aspirational. I'm definitely not asking you to take cycling seriously. One of the many beautiful things about cycling is that it's not serious. On a bike, even the most irksome journey can generate a childlike thrill, but it's powerful. Powerful enough to be worthy of consideration. Time spent thinking about how to do it is never wasted. Warning. When someone tells you this is how to ride a bike, what they almost always mean is this is how I ride a bike and it works for me. If they're a person you can identify with who finds satisfaction in their travel, it's sensible to suck up their wisdom. But it's their wisdom. No matter how inexperienced you may be, you're the expert on your own life. It's up to you to work out what style or styles of riding best fulfill your needs. Bicycling is much too new to have developed a classical form. There are principles, there are no rules. People fear freedom. A common response to the untested potential of this pioneer era is retreat into dogma and sectarianism. You can ride to the opera house with every grain of foundation, every eyebrow hair in perfect order. You can dress in fluorescent sportswear, then endeavour to cover 40 kilometres in 55 minutes. These are both examples of real cycling, both demonstrations of control. Make your riding look easy, or if you want it to be challenging, no harder than you want it to be. Never fight with a bike until you've engaged the lowest riding gear. Let the machine do the work. The consumerist element of riding a bike is delightful, as if you could go to a shop and buy a pair of Usain Bolt legs. But cycling is not a consumerist activity. Where you're going, who you're going with, what you're going to do, see, and eat when you get there are all more important than what you ride. Enjoy cycling, but don't love your bike. Ride it, maintain it, adapt it to your needs, get another one if necessary. The first will never become jealous of the second. Save your love for those who can love you back. If you treat a modern aviation-grade bike designed primarily for Americans to ride in the sunshine like the bike your great-grandfather rode to the mine, it will fail. Feed a racehorse on thistles and it doesn't turn into a donkey, it dies. It's not a moral question. Nobody goes to heaven for having a clean bike, but the people who invented and perfected the derailleur would be astonished at anyone starting a journey on a dirty bike. You don't have to use a machine exactly as its makers intended, but you do need to understand what it was designed for. If you're uncertain whether you really need a particular facility on a bike, leave it off. There's always an argument for minimalism. A puncture is not an emergency. It's what happens when you ride your bike. Make contingency plans. Ride as if you own the road and are ready to share it generously with others. It can be tiresome to be treated as a problem when you're the solution to a problem, but don't let other people's stupidity upset you. Never take it personally. Those afflicted by motor dependence may drag us down towards their own unenviable position, but the primary victims of their misfortune are themselves. Traffic is only other people. Almost all of them are nice people like us, but even the gangsters, the ones whose parents didn't love them enough, don't want, for their own selfish reasons, to run you down. Give them a chance not to run you down, and they won't. On a bicycle, you can take your place on busy roads amongst fast-moving motor traffic, sharing space with people who are literally 50 times more powerful than you is free assertion training. You can also move comfortably amongst the random patterns of pedestrian traffic. A different style is required when you become the element in the mix with most potential to threaten. It's not enough to keep other people safe. You mustn't even frighten them. If you're in a hurry, it's quicker and safer on the road. Our mission is to spread the courtesy and care of the park and footpath into the spaces currently dominated by the ill temper of motor traffic. Not to contaminate motor free space with the brutal get out of my way, I could kill you manners of the highway. The target is a culture of consideration, not a culture of compliance. The 20th century tested the limits of the cheap energy economy. All the daughter technologies of the bicycle that rely on external power are self-limiting. Modern motoring isn't freedom, it's the triumph of patience over imagination. People don't change their habits because they feel guilty. They change when they recognize a better way. The Stone Age didn't end because the cavemen ran out of stones. If I told you 10 years ago that one day the Mayor of London would cycle to work and leave 10,000 bikes lying around the West End and City for anyone to ride, you'd have told me to take a cup of chamomile tea and calm down. The current challenge is to imagine what new madness the next 10 years will bring. Transport revolutions can happen very quickly. The time when human power, the pedal cycle, becomes the default mode of personal mechanical travel may be nearer than we imagine. Riding with elan might hasten that bright morning. Even if it doesn't, the epidemiological evidence is very clear. People who ride bikes live longer. So either way, we increase our chances of being alive on that happy day. Thank you.
That was Patrick Field at the Intelligence Squared Cycling Festival. And you can watch all of the Intelligence Squared talks on their own website, which I'll put a link to from The Bike Show's website, www.thebikeshow.net. The most exciting thing is that Patrick Field is going to be leading the next and the second in the series of Friends of the Bike Show rides, which will be on the 6th of November. And our destination is St Albans, a much underrated tourist destination, according to Patrick. We'll have more on the ride next week, but do check out the website because it's the 6th of November on a Sunday, leaving from East London about 10 in the morning, so nothing too hectic, and about 100 kilometres. So take a look at the website and let us know if you're coming. Thanks for listening. One Life Left are up next. That's been me, Jack Thurston.
And Jen Kerrison.
Cheerio.
Bye-bye.
As we play out to the sounds of The Strides and their version of Crosstown Traffic, and Jen is off studying the map of Great Britain to refine her understanding of the territorial and national niceties of our island, I just wanted to give you a little bit more information as a podcast listener about the Friends of the Bike Show ride, which will be on the 6th of November. The idea of these rides is that it's nothing more than an opportunity for people who listen to the bike show to meet other people who listen to the bike show and to go for a ride. The first one, which started at Look Mum No Hands and headed out east along the Greenway, down over the Woolwich Ferry, back through Charlton for a pub lunch and a stop at the Surrey Dock City Farm before ending at Resonance FM Studios in Borough High Street for a studio tour, was a great success. I think we had about a dozen people, and it was really nice. And that's why I've decided to make them a regular feature. And rather than me being responsible for leading the rides, I've asked other people, friends of the bike show, to volunteer. And Patrick was good enough to offer to lead a ride, and what better person could I hope to find? Because I think Patrick's philosophy of bicycling, and I really have to stress that he is a triple distilled London bicycling guru, I think Patrick's philosophy of bicycling is just what the bike show is all about, and I think it's going to be a great ride. We are going to be leaving from East London around about 10 o'clock in the morning on Sunday the 6th of November, heading out on a combination, Patrick promises, of old high streets and rural B roads up to St Albans, and then carrying on after lunch in St Albans towards Hatfield. I think there'll be a little bit of ex-railway gravel track, so you may want to bring a bike that's got more than 23 millimetre tyres, but I'm sure you'll be fine on any bike. And then we'll end up at Hatfield, where it's possible to take a train back if you've had enough, or turn and return on the old Great North Road. The total distance out and back will be around about 100 kilometres, so not too much, and we'll go at a very leisurely pace. Nobody will be dropped, and there'll be plenty of help on hand if anyone has any kind of mechanical problems. So it should be a great ride. There is a post about it on the website where you can tell us if you're coming, and it will be a good idea to know numbers. And if numbers do reach a certain point, we may well say, okay, that's it. The ride is now full, because there may be a limit to the number that Patrick feels comfortable taking. But then again, you know, we may only be a dozen or 20, and it should be fine. So I hope you can make it. I'm really looking forward to it. Again, it's on the 6th of November. That's a Sunday. And please let us know if you're coming. Tune into the show next week, and thanks for listening. Goodbye.